You're listening to the Coastline Candidate Interviews. I'm Rachel Lewis Hilburn. We're meeting the candidates for North Carolina's 7th Congressional District, which encompasses the coastal counties, Brunswick, New Hanover, and Pender, spreads west to the more rural Columbus, Sampson, Wayne, and Duplin counties. The district also includes portions of Johnston and Bladen County. David Rouser, a Republican historically from Johnston County who recently moved his residence to New Hanover County, has represented the district for two full terms and is seeking his third. Before serving in the U.S. House, David Rouser spent two terms as a North Carolina state senator representing District 12. He joins us now. David Rouser, welcome to Coastline.
Oh, great to be with you.
Great to have you here. And just a reminder for our listeners, this interview is pre-recorded. More than 30 inches of rain from Hurricane Florence fell in some parts of North Carolina. State residents saw damage from storm surge, catastrophic flooding. They suffered through extended power outages. Authorities have confirmed at least 40 storm-related deaths. The damage is estimated to reach billions of dollars, including at least $1.1 billion just in crop and livestock losses. More than a billion has been appropriated for North Carolina recovery efforts. Is that going to be enough? And what's on the horizon? Will the state see additional help?
The state absolutely will see additional help. And let me preface all this by saying I have 9 counties that you listed in the intro, 7 whole, 2 partial. All 9 of them were declared federal disaster areas. And 8 of those 9 were basically underwater. Many of those 8 in some places are still underwater. When you have a flood of this magnitude and of this severity, it portends a very long recovery period. That's point number one. Patience is going to be really important. All my life I've heard that patience is a virtue. It really is. The federal government, its role is to make sure that the state and the local entities have the resources that they need. There's been tremendous coordination between the federal government, the state government, and the local entities, all of them working hand in glove, working very, very well together to see through this response effort and now in the beginnings of the long-term recovery effort. We've had probably almost half the cabinet come to Eastern North Carolina, in addition to the president. In recent weeks. In fact, just the other day, we had Secretary Acosta, Secretary of Labor, Secretary Ben Carson, Secretary of Housing and Urban Development, both here in Wilmington, and in fact, traveling around some of the other counties as well. Secretary Sonny Perdue has been here. This is a very large and strong agriculture district, as many of your listeners probably know. Once you get about 30 miles inland, it's a major mecca of agriculture. Everything from strawberries to blueberries to hogs, turkeys, and chickens. One of the most dominant agriculture districts in the country, quite frankly. And as you mentioned, all have taken huge losses. In fact, agriculture in this district completely, totally wiped out. So Congress came forward about 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago now, and put forward an appropriations measure that was attached to the FAA reauthorization bill. That included $1.14 billion for North Carolina and about half a billion for South Carolina. That money goes through the Community Development Block Grant Disaster Recovery Program. The reason why we allocate money through that program, it is by far the most flexible program that we can funnel money to so that the state can use that money based on the specific needs that they find on the ground. A lot of that money is intended for housing. It's intended for infrastructure repair and other things of that sort. We will come back after the election. Congress returns November the 13th, and we will be working on a comprehensive supplemental disaster package as part of another appropriations measure that will probably be passed right before we come home for Christmas. It's going to be a lot of work to figure out exactly all the damages that are throughout the district. Now, that takes a while to compile.
We've heard some people estimate that, you know, $1.1 billion, that's just a third.
That's just agriculture.
Yeah.
That's not structures and everything else. It's going to be substantial. So what we're doing now is we are working to put together all the needs that are presented to us by all the local entities, whether it's related to schools, whether it's related to agriculture, whether it's related to housing, et cetera, infrastructure. All those things we're putting together, and it won't be, just be a supplemental package later in December. We'll come back next year with other additional measures to help address and expedite this long-term recovery effort.
And the recent storms have also raised again the issue of shoreline stabilization, beach renourishment. That's something that is always a question when we're talking about federal funding.
Well, and that's front and center in this district, and it's an issue that I raised with the president at the roundtable several weeks ago when he was there at Cherry Point and was visiting New Bern and those surrounding areas. Infrastructure includes our beach nourishment, our dredging of our inlets and our waterways. And also, I think it's really important that we have a renewed focus on cleaning out these rivers, streams, creeks, these ditches. All of them are so clogged from just years and years of wear and tear, so to speak, plus Hurricane Matthew, where it hit.
Are you talking about some kind of dredging effort for those smaller waterways?
Well, you could consider that dredging, yes. I just call it, they have a program in the federal government called Snag and Drag, basically where you snag on to all those limbs and tree trunks and everything else that's clogging up the waterways. You've got beaver dams of all sorts. Water has to have somewhere to go. And, of course, if you're going to have 30-plus inches of rain, you're going to have flooding. There's no question about that. That's just an intense and significant amount of rain. But you need to have some place for that water to go. And when your ditches are all clogged up, your rivers, your streams, creeks, et cetera, that flow into those bigger rivers, all that makes a big difference in terms of alleviating future flooding.
And as a result of all of that flooding, we've seen breaches of Hog Lagoons. We've seen a breach of coal ash into the Cape Fear River, which is a drinking water supply source. There have been new environmental concerns around the impacts from these severe storms. And of course, in the past when we've seen storms, we've also seen Hog Lagoons breach. What does that tell us about how we're managing hog waste?
Well, I think it's important to understand that in eastern and southeastern North Carolina, you have roughly 3,400 hog lagoons, hog farms. And of those, only 20 had any issue whatsoever, and I think maybe four or five had some type of breach. So from a statistical standpoint, that is a remarkable record. On the other hand, and this is not a criticism whatsoever, because folks have to do what folks need to do, these municipalities in particular, when you have a flood of this magnitude, and by the way, this was a 1,000-year flood, and you have a significant amount of sewage that is dumped into the rivers just naturally. And these municipalities, they have a permit that enables them to do that because, quite frankly, there's no other choice for them. So the reason why I point that out, there's always a lot of focus about hog farms and lagoons and breaches. But if you fly over eastern North Carolina, as I did right after the storm, there's an interesting phenomenon that you will see. Many of those farms, can't say all of them, but many of those farms, when you look down, you will see the flooding around the, not to the hog houses and not to the lagoons, because they put those on higher elevation. What flooded on many of those farms were the farmers' homes and their barns and tractors and other things that are around it. So they specifically put those farms at higher elevation. A lot of people don't realize that. And that's part of the reason they had such a remarkable record during this storm. Only five had any kind of breach whatsoever out of 3,400.
One of the key issues for the people in the 7th Congressional District in North Carolina is clean drinking water. The public learned relatively recently that multiple chemical compounds that are currently unregulated and with current technology unable to be filtered out are in the drinking water supply for several hundred thousand people. These compounds are dangerous to human health. The EPA is working now on setting a standard for PFAS. In light of this revelation, is there a place for greater regulation in this part, in a healthy government? If you were in charge of the drinking water supply for this region, how would you handle dealing with the industries who emit these chemical compounds?
Well, first of all, I think it's important to understand there's thousands of unregulated contaminants, as they call it. Gen X fits under that category. I'd never heard anything about Gen X until the news reports this past summer. And, of course, one thing that popped out to me was that it had been discharged in the river since the early 1980s, 30-some years. Mandy Cohen, Secretary of Health and Human Services, the governor, and others came down. We had a meeting of all the local officials. I was in attendance for this one particular meeting where we raised the question, what's the health data show? If this has been in the water for 30-plus years, which was news to all of us, Mayor Sappho, Woody White, all of us around the table were like, is that what they just said? It's been in the water for 30 years. If that's the case, what does the health data show? Is there any abnormality? Is there anything that protrudes its head in the health data that gives some indication of the severity of this issue? And I remember very specifically Mandy Cohen saying they had looked at all that and there were no abnormalities that they could find whatsoever. Now, at that point in time, I met with Kim Moores. They came and visited with me in my office at my request.
And you took a $1,000 contribution, campaign contribution from DuPont representatives, the parent company of Kim Moores.
And Kim Moores is a spinoff of DuPont. And that, but if you look at my campaign contributions, I receive a tremendous amount from a number of different folks.
Why would you take a campaign contribution from DuPont in light of what happened with Gen X?
Well, number one, at the time that that was made, I didn't know anything about Gen X. They had pledged to a fundraiser of mine early in that quarter. And their money came in. The way a lot of PACs do it is they give out all their checks to the members at the same time, at the very end of the quarter. So the timeline there, for one thing, is not accurate that I received the money after learning of Gen X. But let me say this. Kim Moores is a complete, total, separate entity from DuPont. Now, what is important?
But DuPont is responsible for dumping a lot of chemical compounds into waterways in other parts of this country, and they've faced lawsuits over that, and there have been documented health effects from some of the compounds they've dumped. So I don't think you can characterize DuPont as having no hand in this.
Well, the fact of the matter is, Kim Moores is a spinoff. DuPont, it does not have managerial responsibility over what Kim Moores does. And I think the really important point moving forward is that you have a whole class of what they call unregulated contaminants. And I think the EPA, and I said this publicly way back then, the EPA needs to come up with some standard for these unregulated contaminants. And they had pledged to me long ago, and they're working on this, of coming up with a standard, a health standard for Gen X. I think that's important, and not just for Gen X, but all these others that are in the water
all
as well.
All of the compounds fit into that one classification.
Mm-hmm, that's correct. But there are many more unregulated contaminants as well. I never thought of the term unregulated contaminant until unidentified contaminant, whatever it is that they refer to it officially, until the Gen X scenario came about. And the fact of the matter is they're working on developing a standard so that we know. And I asked them, I said, how confident are you going to be in the standard that you release? And they said, we're going to be very, very confident in it because we have the expertise and the personnel to be able to determine what's safe and what's not safe. It's going to take us a little bit of time to do it, but it's going to be sooner rather than later. And I anticipate, based on what they told me, that the EPA will have some standard that they set forth here in the next few months.
The Trump administration has started compensating U.S. farmers for damage that tariffs are doing to their business. But according to the Wall Street Journal, many farmers are saying those payments won't make up for lost sales to China and other foreign markets they were counting on to buy the huge amount of crops and meat being produced. North Carolina exports a little more than $32.5 billion of goods and services. What would you say to North Carolina farmers who are struggling now with that tariff load?
Well, the fact of the matter is we just renegotiated, the administration did, I think a very good deal with Mexico and Canada that's going to be beneficial to all of American agriculture. It did no harm whatsoever to the pork industry and pork exports there. That Mexico is a huge, huge market for pork. And it's I think, a real feather in the administration's cap that they were able to basically improve upon the NAFTA agreement that was in place that had been so beneficial to agriculture in this country. With respect to China, which is where the main focus on tariffs lies, Look, China is communist. A lot of people forget that. They lie, cheat, and steal every chance they get. They have stolen our intellectual property for years and years and years. And the president's purpose and focus with these tariffs as it relates to China is to use them as a leveraging point to bring them back to the table and renegotiate a better arrangement, a better trade arrangement, and force China to quit stealing our intellectual property. They are notorious for it, and they don't just steal ours, they steal everybody's.
I want to move to the art of compromise, because this is something that you and I talked about a couple years ago. Just a minute left. Republican Senator Jeff Flake of Arizona recently told 60 Minutes there's no value in reaching across the aisle, no currency for that anymore. Is that true? And if that's true, what do you think we lose?
You know, the coarseness of our politics today is what bothers me, very much so. And I think we need to get back and understand that the other side is not the enemy. They just have a different perspective, a different point of view. And we need to build those bridges and work together. But quite honestly, the bases of the two parties have gone to such an extreme, it makes it harder and harder to do that.
And that's this edition of Coastline. Congressman David Rauser, thanks so much for being with us
today.
Great
to be with you.
Thanks also to Kyle Horton and David Fallon. Coastline's technical director is Ken Campbell. Producer is Rachel Keith. Production manager is Caitlin Hanrahan. Caitlin Freund is our webmaster. Coastline is a production of WHQR Public Media. Remember, early voting is underway. Election Day is November 6th. I'm Rachel Lewis-Hilburn for Coastline.